Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Phil Dierking, and Alice Bryant. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and later, John Russell and Alice Bryant will bring us this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, the United States and its allies have again responded to a North Korean missile test. This time, the response included a military exercise using real ammunition. American military aircraft included two B-1B bombers from a base in Guam and four F-35B stealth fighter jets from a base in Japan. Four South Korean fighter jets joined the Americans to fly over the Korean Peninsula. And Japanese military aircraft flew over Japanese waters in the 10-hour operation. The combined forces released live weapons at the Pilsung Range training area. The show of force came 2 days after North Korea fired an intermediate-range missile over Japan. General Terence J. O'Shaughnessy is the commander of U.S. Pacific Air Forces. He said, "North Korea's actions are a threat to our allies, partners, and homeland, and their destabilizing actions will be met accordingly. Our forward deployed force will be the first to the fight, ready to deliver a lethal response at a moment's notice if our nation calls." North Korea's official Korean Central News Agency issued a statement calling the exercise a rash act of those taken aback by North Korea's recent missile launch. The U.S. military frequently responds to North Korean actions with a show of force display of its attack aircraft. In July, the U.S. and South Korean militaries also fired missiles into South Korean waters. The action was in response to a North Korean intercontinental ballistic missile launch. Joseph Dunford is the top general of the U.S. military. On a recent trip to the region, he said the military's main goal is supporting U.S. efforts to denuclearize the Korean Peninsula. But he added that the U.S. is preparing what he called viable military options in the event that those efforts fail.
British and EU officials say they are deadlocked after 4 days of negotiations on Britain's exit from Europe, known as Brexit. The two sides appear to disagree on which parts of Brexit should be negotiated first. EU officials say British negotiators are not clear about what they want. But the British side says negotiating a trade deal should come before talks on terms for leaving the EU. Another point of disagreement is the amount of money Britain will have to pay the EU when it leaves. Some estimates place the amount at $89 billion. The EU is seeking the money for budget payments and to pay for projects and loans that were agreed to in 2013. That is before the referendum on June 23rd of 2016, when Britons voted to leave the EU. Michel Barnier is the chief EU negotiator for Brexit. He told reporters, "To be flexible, you need 2 points, our point and their point. We need to know their position, and then I can be flexible." The European Parliament's coordinator, Guy Verhofstadt, said, "The other party is not responding. Because of this," he said, "it is difficult to start a negotiation." Verhofstadt also released a video of himself talking about the difficulties of the negotiations on the social media network Twitter. He tweeted, "I fear that some of the Brexit hardliners don't want to negotiate." The EU wants the two sides to make progress on an agreement for Britain to leave the group by October. The EU does not want trade talks to begin until this step is reached. Experts say that the British side does not want to settle on a Brexit payment until they secure a good free trade deal. The EU, however, has described the Brexit payment and future trade agreement as two separate issues. British Prime Minister Theresa May said, "I think a good trade deal is not just about the UK. It is about what is good for businesses in what will be the 27 remaining states of the EU as well." May admitted that Britain would have to pay money to the EU on leaving the group, but trade remained the main issue. "I think it is in all our interest to move on to those trade talks and to get a good idea." Border policies are another issue that has slowed talks. The two sides have made little progress on how Europeans will be treated under British law and other border issues. The sides must agree on the rights of more than 2 million European citizens and their families who are living and working in Britain. And an estimated 1.3 million Britons live in EU countries. In addition, Britain must work out border issues with the Republic of Ireland, an EU member. Ireland and Northern Ireland oppose harsh border policies, fearing a renewal of the Irish conflict. Ireland also has threatened to veto trade negotiations until officials are satisfied with the border agreement. Some former British officials have criticized the British government's negotiating strategy. They say it shows sharp disagreements between members of May's cabinet and Conservative Party Parliament ministers. They disagree on whether Britain should remain a member of the EU Single Market and Customs Union. Such a move would make trade easier, but Britain would have no control over trade rules set by the EU after it leaves the group. Finance Minister Phil Hammond has the support of many top business leaders. He is trying to influence the Conservative Party away from a sharp break with Europe and its rules, which is being called a hard Brexit. The public is growing more concerned about Brexit, according to opinion studies, because of increasingly bad economic news. There also are concerns that Britain will lose many of the EU citizens who live and work in the country. The professional services company KPMG said in a study that about 1 million EU citizens, many who are highly educated, are planning to leave the country because of Brexit. I'm Mario Ritter.
In a factory near Tokyo, thousands of cans are filled with beer, capped, washed, and put into boxes at speeds of 1,500 cans a minute. However, there are hardly any people in sight as the cans speed through processing. Japan's Asahi Breweries operates the factory. The machines do almost all of the physical work. Humans make sure that the machines do the work right and the automated sensing devices are working correctly. Basically, nothing goes wrong. The lines are up and running 96%, said Shinichi Uno, a manager at the factory. Although machines make things, human beings oversee the machines.
While some countries, like the U.S., are debating the issue of robots taking jobs from humans, in Japan, the discussion is much different. Birth rates in Japan have been decreasing for many years. This has caused many in the country to fear the possibility of a labor shortage. The introduction of robots has filled this need for labor. The robots appear to be a welcomed addition to the workforce in Japan. Starting in the 1990s, Japan began a big push to develop robots for the workforce. It currently leads the world in the use of robots. There are 1,562 robots for every 10,000 human workers. This is higher than Germany, with 1,133 robots, or the U.S., with 1,091 for every worker. The numbers come from a White House report submitted to Congress last year. The report says Japan also was ahead in robots used outside of the automobile industry, with 219 robots per 10,000 workers, compared to 76 for the U.S. and 147 for Germany.
There are some differences with Japan's work culture that might influence Japanese opinions about giving jobs to robots. One important difference is their lifetime employment system. In Japan, many major companies often keep their workers, even if their skills become outdated. They will use them instead for other tasks, said Koichi Iwamoto, a senior fellow at the Research Institute of Economy, Trade, and Industry. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, or OECD, gathers information about the use of robots in its member countries. The information shows that increasing the use of robots or computer programs at work decreases the demand for mid-level or repetitive work tasks, such as operating assembly lines. But it increases the demand for low and high-skilled jobs. However, the OECD data showed employment conditions remained almost unchanged for Japan for the period from 2002 to 2014. That means companies in Japan were not trying as hard as those in the U.S. to replace humans with robots. Clerical workers, for example, were keeping their jobs although computers might do their jobs better. Another example is how Japanese society has so far preferred to keep taxis instead of shifting to online ride services.
But machines have increasingly replaced people in Japan. Iwamoto says the country now has entered a reflective stage. He says people are actually interested in having human harmony with machines. Some tasks may be better performed by people after all, said Iwamoto. Kiyoshi Sakai also is an Asahi employee. He has worked at the company for 29 years. He said that in the past, can caps were put into machines by hand. This was a repetitive task that was hard on the body and the mind. Now, machines have replaced many of those jobs, and he is grateful for the changes to his work life. Machines at the plant have become more than 50% smaller over the years. They are faster and more precise than 30 years ago.
I'm Phil Dierking.
And I'm Alice Bryant.
This is What's Trending Today. Tennis players must wear almost all white at Wimbledon. That includes shorts, shirts, hats, dresses, shoes, and socks. But when they get to New York in the late summer for the U.S. Open, they let their personalities come out through their clothing. Serena Williams is one player who always wears something special. In 2004, Williams wore calf-high, shiny black Nike tennis shoes. But this year, Williams is not playing due to her pregnancy. It turns out, other players are taking over the fashion show. On Monday night, Maria Sharapova played in her first major tournament in over a year. She was suspended for taking a banned drug in early 2016. She impressed the crowd with a shiny black dress. The dress shined because it was embedded with crystals. After she won her opening match, she said, "Behind these Swarovski crystals and little black dresses, this girl has a lot of grit, and she's not going anywhere." Among the male players at the tournament, people are talking about the clothing worn this week by Alexander Zverev from Germany. Zverev was the fourth-ranked player in the tournament. Tennis experts thought he could win the title. Against Darien King of Barbados, Zverev was wearing a tennis outfit similar to the one worn by Swedish star Bjorn Borg in the 1970s. He had a white headband with thin stripes holding back his long hair. He wore a similarly styled shirt and even completed the throwback look with high white socks. Tennis players have not worn those socks since the early 1980s. Zverev said his look was designed by singer Pharrell Williams. On Twitter, many people talked about the high socks. Some liked them. Others did not. In his next match, however, Zverev lost to Croatia's Borna Coric. This time, he was wearing shorter socks. Maybe that was the difference. One Twitter user, Jen, definitely thought so. She wrote, "Zverev clearly should have kept the long socks." And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
The 2008 film, The Dark Knight, tells the story of Batman, a fictional superhero. At one point in the movie, Batman's enemy, the Joker, says the following lines.
"My father was a drinker and a fiend. And one night, he goes off crazier than usual. He turns to me and he says, 'Why so serious?'"
Today's report is not about violent stories, nor is it about superheroes. Instead, it is about reported speech. You will learn how Americans report speech in everyday situations. You will learn about different verb tenses speakers use to report speech. So, what is the link between the Joker's lines and reported speech? We will tell you, but first we must give you some definitions.
In everyday speech, speakers often report what others say. They quote what other people told them, or they repeat what they said themselves. This is known as direct speech. The verb say is often used to report direct speech in conversation. Note Susan Conrad and Douglas Biber, two English grammar experts. Here is an example.
"I called the mechanic and said I was ready to come pick up my car, a white convertible, and he said, 'Oh, sorry, somebody already picked it up.' And I said, 'Excuse me? Who did you give my car to?'"
In the example, the speaker used the verb say in the past tense just before the speech that he was reporting. This is a conversational, informal way of reporting what a person said. You can imagine that the speaker is a little angry about this story. His car seems to have disappeared.
Direct speech makes a story more exciting. To make the story even more interesting, some speakers use the quoting verb in the historic present tense. This means that a present tense verb is used to refer to past time. Here is an example.
"He was sitting there drinking his coffee, and he says, 'What is this?' It was a tooth."
In the example, the speaker uses the present tense. She said, says instead of said. This is the historic present tense. Speakers use this form because it makes the story sound more immediate, more exciting, and less formal. You heard an example of the historic present at the beginning of this report. The Joker had already shown that he was talking about the past when he said,
"My father was a drinker and a fiend."
Then he changes to the historic present tense.
He turns to me and he says, "Why so serious?"
The good news about the so-called historic present is this. You do not need to use it. You should not use it in writing, and you should probably not use it in speaking either. However, it can be useful to understand it. Native speakers might use it in conversation, and when they do, you will understand what they mean.
In everyday informal speech, Americans often use other verbs and expressions to report direct speech. Some of these verbs and expressions have the same meaning as say. The most common of these is probably the verb go. Often used in the simple present tense, the verb go is used commonly by young people, although older people use it too. Here's an example.
I asked him why he didn't call me back, and he goes, "Well, I didn't get your message."
Here, the verb go is taking the place of the verb say. The speaker could have said, "And he said, 'Well, I didn't get your message.'" Americans also use the expression be like to replace the verb say. Be like is commonly used among young adults, but many older people also use it. This structure is primarily used among friends. Consider this example.
I'm like, "Are you from Washington, D.C.?" And she's like, "Yeah, how did you know?"
Be like can also be used to report thoughts rather than speech. When speakers use be like in this manner, it takes on the meaning of to be thinking something.
The next time you are watching television or talking to an American, try to listen for examples of reported speech. Does the speaker report speech using the verb say? Or does he or she choose a different word or expression? Ask yourself if the speaker is using the historic present tense to add excitement to the story. With time and with practice, you will learn how Americans report speech. You might even be able to report speech in a similar manner. However, one warning: do not try to use the historic present tense. If you use it incorrectly, you might confuse others. We did not talk about formal reported speech today. If you would like to learn more about formal reported speech, please read our previous Everyday Grammar story, "They Say That Reported Speech Is Easy." You can find it on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Alice Bryant.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.